You're listening to a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
In September last year, China's President Xi Jinping appeared at a ceremony in the Great Hall of the People in Beijing, proclaiming victory over the novel coronavirus and COVID-19.
中国的抗疫斗争充分展现了中国精神、中国力量、中国担当。
What he's actually saying is that China's war against the epidemic fully demonstrates China's spirit, capability, and sense of responsibility. Back then, China had reported zero cases for 22 days in a row, while India, the United Kingdom, and the United States were struggling to contain growing outbreaks. More than 1,500 health workers were given medals for their work in treating patients and helping to contain the spread of COVID-19 in China. In a show of confidence to demonstrate to the world that China had controlled the spread of the virus, none of these people wore masks at the ceremony. But here we are, 9 months later, and China finds itself confronting not one, but two challenges to its pandemic narrative. There's a new outbreak in the megacity of Guangzhou in southern China and the hub for some of the busiest container ports in the world. And there's also been a resurgence in something else.
Where did COVID-19 come from? At the moment, it raises more questions.
The origin of the virus remains hotly contested and is under study by U.S. intelligence agencies.
Putting renewed focus on the Chinese city where it was first publicly detected, Wuhan.
The Centers for Disease Control director Rochelle Walensky is now suggesting that maybe it emanating from the laboratory is a possible route of its
entry. I've been saying from the very beginning, last February, that the most likely explanation for this pandemic is a leak from the laboratories in Wuhan.
Last year, it was called a conspiracy theory. The idea that the coronavirus that causes COVID-19 didn't come from the Huanan seafood market in Wuhan, but leaked from the laboratory of the Wuhan Institute for Virology. Just a fortnight ago, U.S. President Joe Biden ordered American intelligence agencies to investigate and report back within 90 days with a conclusion. Is it from the lab or from somewhere else? Welcome to our latest pandemic edition of the Inside China podcast. My name is Mimi Lau. As always, with our pandemic podcast, a reminder that this story is developing and you can always find the latest updates 24 hours a day on the South China Morning Post website at scmp.com. In this episode, you're going to hear how the Wuhan lab leak theory has moved into the mainstream, but also how new evidence exposes the true extent of wild animals being butchered and sold in the wet markets of Wuhan, including at the now infamous Huanan Seafood Market. We're also going to peel back and reveal some of the agendas surrounding the origins of the pandemic, in particular for one former American president who wants his job back.
If Trump was right about the lab leak, it would change the image the public had of President Trump regarding the coronavirus.
But first, we're going to take you to Guangzhou, just about 100 kilometers from the Hong Kong border checkpoint. Back in February last year, many people across the Western world were learning about the city of Wuhan. Well, here in Hong Kong, we figured the best way to explain it was to describe it as a Chicago of China. So let me tell you a bit about Guangzhou. It is home to more than 18 million people, one of China's largest cities, and actually, it was the capital city of China 3 times during the first half of the 20th century. But most importantly, it is one of China's most important harbor cities. The harbor has a 2,000-year history as China's major trading hub to the world. Guangzhou is the capital of Guangdong Province in southern China, and this part of China is responsible for almost 25% of China's entire exports to the world. Now try and imagine what kind of damage this would do to China's economy and global trade if the virus shuts down this region. Ever since 21st of May, the city of Guangzhou has been on high alert as China's health authorities throw everything they've got at controlling an outbreak of COVID-19.
It started with a 75-year-old lady reported with COVID-19 in Guangzhou, and since then, over 150 local cases have been reported. In the past week, more than 18 million people have been tested. My colleague Guo Rui is based in Guangzhou with the South China Morning Post, reporting what's going on there. So, Guo Rui, can you tell us what is it like in Guangzhou right now? How does it feel to walk around the streets and the shopping mall and the transportation? Is it all very quiet?
It's very quiet and kind of normal for me, because for now I'm living in Chonghua District, the northernmost district of Guangzhou. When people walking around, they don't wear masks. Can you imagine that? Yeah, because we've done the first time mass screening test just like Sunday, and tomorrow we will do it again. I heard that. So people are very laid back and relaxed here, because the virus is very far from us. It's like 50 kilometers away. So people in the suburban districts, they are not worried at all. Yesterday, I went to downtown. It's very less crowded there in the shopping malls, and the people should show their QR code that will record everywhere you went during the last 14 days to prove that you haven't gone to the high-risk areas.
Is the city partially locked down still, or is it just concentrated in Liwan right now?
I think just concentrated in Liwan district and only a few streets in Haizhou district.
Okay.
Yeah, people under lockdown there, the residents cannot go out or cannot go downstairs, and the food and other goods will be delivered to their doors.
From your latest trip to Liwan district, what other people are telling you about their everyday lives, like quarantine and the supply of grocery? How are things going for them?
After the lockdown, I cannot get into the areas. Even I cannot go by there because my QR code will turn red. That means I have been to high-risk areas. So I can only talk with them online through social media. One of my friends is living in the most seriously hit building, and they have been transferred to hotels for centralized quarantine, because the government told them it's not convenient or not safe for them to stay at homes anymore, because there are new cases almost every day in the last 2 weeks.
So does it look like things are under control, or we are still waiting to observe if things are going to improve in the near future?
Actually, we are not very sure now. And the government starts transferring people, like thousands of people from Liwan district to hotels. So we are not sure when will it be improved.
Guo Rui, can you help us to put things into perspective? Guangzhou City has a population of at least 18 million. And what is the number so far for this round of outbreak in Guangzhou since May 21st? Is that relatively small for compared to other developed countries or other nations that are, you know, have seen a recent outbreak?
Today, the number is 115 confirmed cases. It's very small compared with the nearly 19 million population here. But, you know, during the last year, we haven't seen an outbreak like this. Yeah, so many areas locked down and people need to be transferred or stayed at their homes strictly. It's kind of like Wuhan, you know, Wuhan in the early stage. But it's not proper to compare with Wuhan, because for now we have more experience and the government has more force on that. But we are still worried about the more cases in the same chain. And just like I mentioned before, in the outskirts, and the people are living a different life. Yeah, maybe just as a reporter, I need to keep my eyes on the situations in Liwan every day, so I'm a little bit worried.
So, Gore, the Guangzhou authorities are really on guard, running massive tests repeatedly, moving thousands of people from Liwan district to designated quarantine hotel, and they're still on the course of doing that. But then you're also saying people in suburban Guangzhou, such as in Chonghua district, the northern part of it, are walking around like there's not much things are happening, sometimes even without masks and looking relaxed and all that. So what are people are saying about this pandemic on social media?
Yeah, there are various voices on social media. Yeah, I need to monitor that almost every day. First, we can imagine that people from other provinces or cities are showing support to Guangzhou. They can understand at first it's messy and chaotic and not good or not well organized. The many elderly people, they would not like to be transferred. They refused to be transferred. They just want to stay at their homes. And some people have been transferred to hotels and still waiting for their medicines and other things. Yeah, it's not easy.
Can you also tell us what is happening in another part of Guangzhou, that is in Nansha? It's right at the southern tip of the city, right? It's being also listed as a risky area in the latest outbreak. Mm-hmm. So is there any update you have heard on that?
I've heard that the transportation and exits have been resumed. There were 6 cases from one family confirmed on Saturday. So the district government suspended all the transport that day. But now, after the massive screening there on Sunday and Monday, and no more cases, so they reopened that area.
Are you sensing that people are quite happy with the arrangement and is patiently waiting for this outbreak to end?
Happy. One interesting part is that I saw the voice on social media that people didn't cyber bully the first patients here. And we've heard that in other cities, the patients have been attacked because it's like that they brought the virus and communicated them. But in Guangzhou, I didn't see that. So I think it's the very warm part. People showed support and wishes to the grandmother.
Thank you so much for your time, Gore. We understand this pandemic in Guangzhou has been keeping you busy, and it's looked like you will be busy for another while.
As critical news stories emerging from China continue to shape lives and business around the world, the weekly SCMP Global Impact Newsletter brings you expert analyses and insights on the economics of COVID-19, society, technology, and the environment. Sign up to receive your weekly email at scmp.com/newsletters.
19 in Guangzhou isn't making world headlines right now. In the last few days, it's all about the Wuhan Institute of Virology and what really happened in the last month of 2019. Now, we've been covering all aspects of this pandemic since January last year. Part of that has been the infodemic of fake and inaccurate information. And we have even spoken about the theory that a book published in 1981 predicted not only the pandemic, but it would start in Wuhan. This is
Tell me about the audio book you listened to just recently.
Yes, well, I felt compelled to go and listen again to the book by Dean Kuntz that everyone is talking about now, because there's a conspiracy theory that this is a bioengineered or an accidental escape from a bio lab in Wuhan. And there is a bio lab in Wuhan.
Sarah Bowen, speaking with us on a Patient Zero podcast in March last year.
So I listened to the book again, which I think is really an interesting coincidence, but really just that, because in fact, they have gone and looked at the genome of this virus, and it is not an engineered virus. You can tell that by looking at the virus, that it's neither an artificial virus nor one that's been artificially altered by humans. It's an animal virus that it has adapted to humans. And so I think that is just, people love conspiracy theories. And I think I find it interesting that people have such a hard time wrapping their head around the idea that actually Mother Nature is perfectly devious all by herself, doesn't need our help.
Two people you have heard on this podcast over the past 15 months are here right now to discuss this. Reporter Simone McCarthy and China Desk editor Teddy Ng. Simone, can you help me to join the dots on the 3 points of recent history about how we got here? In February, the WHO released initial findings from its investigation into the origins of the coronavirus and announces it is, quote, extremely unlikely the virus started in a Wuhan lab. In March, Beijing issues a statement saying no further investigation is needed. And in late May, U.S. President Joe Biden says more investigation is needed about a potential lab leak. Did I miss anything?
Well, I mean, that's certainly the outline of the trajectory here, but there's just been so much going on with this issue. So I guess you're absolutely right. The WHO mission to Wuhan, highly anticipated, in the works for months, finally ends. They come out with that judgment that it's extremely unlikely that it came from a lab. But that mission itself was almost immediately met with so much pushback and criticism, people calling it a whitewash, saying, even members of the team itself were coming forward and saying that they didn't have access to all of the data that they would have wanted to see. And so there was a lot of pushback from, I think, something like 13 governments right off the bat came forward and said, we need another investigation. We need China to be more open about this. But I think the key thing about that is, while they said it was extremely unlikely that it came from a lab and it was most likely it passed from a bat through another animal into humans, they didn't find any evidence for anything. And so that also got people looking back at questions and thinking, well, maybe we should take a harder look at this lab theory because we don't have any clues on the ground. And so increasingly prominent voices in the U.S. started calling for there to be more of a look into this lab leak theory. I mean, we have Anthony Fauci, who is one of the most respected infectious disease experts in America, even talking about this issue now.
You need to keep looking for the link.
This is Fauci talking on breakfast television in the U.S.
And you need to keep looking for evidence that it's something else, like a lab leak. Those are open possibilities.
So how significant is that?
Well, I think it's really indicative of just the turn of public opinion in the U.S. that this really is something that should be looked into. I mean, even Fauci is saying it, right? The other thing that came up as well is that the Wall Street Journal, and followed by a few different American media outlets, started turning back to the statement made at the final days of the Trump administration, which was pointing to 3 workers getting sick at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, suggesting that perhaps that could have been the start of the pandemic. The White House has not confirmed or denied that. The lab itself has vehemently denied it. But that all happened immediately before the Biden White House came out and said, okay, intelligence agencies, you have 90 days to examine the natural origins theory, examine the lab leak theory, and give me a report.
So I'd just like to turn to Teddy for a second here. So Teddy, Beijing has criticized for not giving enough information to the WHO team of investigators sent to Wuhan. What has been the reaction to Joe Biden's call to investigate the Wuhan lab?
It's denial and rejection. As people would have expected, Beijing have rejected the allegations by Joe Biden, with the foreign ministry saying the Fort Detrick lab in Maryland, they're saying that this lab in Maryland should also be investigated and calling on the U.S. to allow WHO, you know, scientists from other nations to go inside the lab, look into it and investigate rather it is the origin of the coronavirus.
So do you think there is any chance Beijing will allow the WHO team to undertake the second phase of this investigation?
I think Beijing might consider it, allowing the WHO to go to Wuhan again to do the investigations, because give the WHO at the end of the investigations, they say again that this lab leak theory is unlikely. That would be a credible defense for Beijing against the allegations by the US.
Mm. So, and last year you were on this podcast talking about Dr. Li Wenliang and how he had been silenced by authorities. Do you think this kind of example affects how scientists and middle-level officials in Wuhan would think about sharing information?
I think for long, I mean, scientists in China are working very cautiously. They have been saying that they have already shared what they can. I think they will be very cautious in like making comments, like calling for China to share more information. They would be very cautious about that.
Let's circle back to Simone here for a little bit. On top of this was another scientific report published just this week on Nature.com, but it wasn't about the Wuhan lab. Simone, what can you tell us about this?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, this was so interesting. I mean, I nerd out about this stuff, I was so excited when I saw this report. But it's especially interesting within the context of the point that Teddy just raised, that, I mean, there really are questions about, is there other research that's been going on in China that hasn't been shared with the international community? And that's what's driving a lot of these calls for there to be more, you know, another investigation or more transparency. So basically what this is a team of researchers from China West Normal University in Sichuan and Oxford University who have, over the past 2.5 years, been monthly going to 4 markets in Wuhan, including the one which was linked to a number of the earliest cases in the city back in the end of 2019. And they've been interviewing those wild animal salespeople who are operating stalls and actually taking count of what animals they're selling from their stall each month. And so they recorded an estimated 47,000 individual animals being sold over the past 2.5 years out of those markets. And what's really significant about the research is that several of those animals, which are being moved on a monthly basis, are ones which we know are susceptible to SARS-like coronaviruses. There was the palm civets, who were the intermediary host animal during the SARS outbreak. There's also mink, who have been implicated in another of these outbreaks in Europe with SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19. And so, I mean, when I saw the paper, I reached out to a member of the WHO team who I've been in touch with throughout this whole process. And, I mean, he very much validated that it was extremely important research. It confirms that those mammals were there in the city and also confirmed one of the recommendations in their report, which was that the supply chains need to be traced back. And people who are on farms, which are legally farming those animals, should be tested, interviewed, you know, really do that more targeted research, which hasn't been done in China as far as we know.
Out of those 47,000 animals you mentioned in that report, whom the scientists been tracking, were there any bats and pangolins involved?
Oh, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. No, there were not. And so they addressed this in the paper, and the researchers felt like they were pretty confident in their results, and they felt they would have known if either of those animals were being sold through these markets. So they didn't find any evidence of that.
So, Simone, with this Wuhan lab leak theory, so much conspiracy and discussion around it, I'm just wondering if you think there's any other agenda out there being played out?
Yeah, I think that it's certainly moved from just a purely scientific discussion to a highly political one. One of the trends that we do see in the U.S., and I think we even played a clip, which is a perfect example of it, at the start of the podcast, is that the conversation is being used in the U.S. to sort of rehabilitate former President Donald Trump's image. Because, I mean, as we know, the situation with COVID in the United States is there's been almost 600,000 deaths. And that his administration's handling has been, has come in for significant criticism. And so there is a lot of conversation about, well, maybe he was right, and this is something that's being used to spin the narrative.
So back in China, we started this podcast talking about President Xi Jinping claiming victory over the pandemic last September. Teddy, do you think there are sensitivities regarding this new outbreak in Guangzhou?
Yes, of course. I mean, the authorities in Guangdong is very alerted against these recent surge in number of cases. First, of course, China doesn't want any new outbreak to affect its image that it has successfully contained the COVID outbreak. And second is that Guangdong is the major economic hub of China. And outbreaks there, I mean, can have an impact to China's economic development. While we have run reports suggesting that manufacturers are already seeing that export orders have kind of a slowdown because of the outbreaks. I mean, this is kind of a huge impact to the businesses there. And of course, the quarantine measures in Beijing is very strict. So most of the overseas visitors are going to China through Guangdong.
Thank you so much for your time, Simon and Teddy. I really appreciate this. We look forward to bringing you back on some more insight on development of the Wuhan lab leak and the politics behind coronavirus investigation. Week on Inside China podcast. Thank you so much for listening. It's great to be back on the microphone after a short break. Don't forget to check scmp.com for our 24 hours live update on COVID-19. Get your vaccination if you haven't, and keep your social distance, and remember to wash your hands. Thank you so much once again. My name is Mimi Lau.
For more podcasts from the South China Morning Post, head to scmp.com, where you can hear more about technology, trade, culture, and society.